Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
And welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking about a subject that I know you've heard about. The subject is autism. But what you're not going to be expecting is the results a woman by the name of Lynette Louise achieved with four children, they're her own kids, that had autism. Each and every one of them was different, but she went the extra mile to do what very few people have ever been willing to do, and that is to explore the unknown regarding the brain, and we're going to be hearing more about that right now. Lynette, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Donna. Thank you for having me.
I like how you say you're board certified in neurofeedback and a PhD in mom.
Actually, it was really interesting because I was talking, being interviewed on a show, and he said it as if that was an actual degree, and I'm like, wait a minute, PhD in mom is something I earned through the School of Hard Knocks.
Yes, and I think any woman listening at this time would say anyone that had eight kids, in fact, I mentioned the fact to someone that I was doing an interview with you today, you had eight children, and it was a man, he said, she must be a glutton for punishment.
And actually, I was greedy for joy.
A different application of thought. Isn't it always the way? But yes. Children are a lot of work. Now, you have, quite literally, become an expert on autism, but in a different way. I've done a number of interviews through my 10 years of broadcasting, and I've found that there have been mothers that have used music, there's been nutrition involved, but you took a perspective that I just went, yahoo, this is really significant. First of all, tell us what autism is. There may be some people listening that do not know what autism is.
Okay, so autism is considered a spectrum disorder, which I find somewhat interesting in and of itself because basically being human is a spectrum disorder. It means that it has different layers and, different severities. So somebody who's very low-functioning autistic is obviously got a heavier dose of the disability than someone who would be considered high-functioning. In order to be on the spectrum, you have to have a number of things, but of all of the diagnostic criteria, you definitely have to have three. You have to fit into three of the following: social issues, so you have to have some problems in social skills. And that can be everything from you absolutely won't have anything to do with human beings to whenever I talk to people, I only want to talk on my subject. So again, it's a big spectrum, a big area of difference from one to another. But you have to have some elements of that. You have to have a communication disorder of some type, and again, it's a huge spectrum. You can be completely mute and unable to speak at all. And you can be somebody who has great language, but again, will only speak on your subject of interest. And then you have to have repetitious behavior. So something that you do over and over and over again is called self-stimulatory behavior. It may be that you pick up a rock and drop it continuously, driving everyone around you crazy. Or, again, all the way at the top, you may just only want to engage in your subject of interest. So you can see how, as you move and change and grow and learn, these themes stay with you. They just sort of become lighter and less disabling as you move along the spectrum. There's also an element of sensory integration disorder. It's not necessary to get the diagnosis of autism, but in my experience, and I work internationally all over the world now, I've never, ever met a child with autism that doesn't have a sensory issue. And in fact, I think that at the base of the social issue, a lot of that is sensory.
Now, give an example of that.
Of a sensory problem?
Yes.
Well, I had sensory issues when I was a kid, and so for me, there's a few things. One is that when music played, I saw color. So I could play the piano by music. Certain notes had certain colors associated with them. And I didn't know that that was unusual. I have a joke. I do a talk and a show about this, and I say, every disability has its advantages. I really enjoyed watching the radio every Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it stayed with me and slowly kind of went away as I grew. It's called synesthesia, and many children grow out of this. But in my case, I was sort of tainted a little bit with the feeling. I have a relationship with music that's color-driven. For me, you know, if I were to take my library of music, I would put it, these are the red songs, these are the purple songs. Mm-hmm. So I still kind of relate to it in that sense.
Well, this is fascinating because I had a guest on about 2 months ago who wrote a book on synesthesia. It was quite extensive because that's her whole realm. That's what she's in all the time.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. And it's not just I use the color, seeing sound as color example, but it's so fascinating. Now, I never had this one, but some children taste shape. So
mm-hmm.
you might be trying to get this child to eat, you know, tomato soup, and they're very adverse to putting it in their mouth. And if they have language, you might find out that to them it tastes too much like diamonds and it's too pokey. It's very, very strange to try to take what we see as the world and realize it's really a construct that's created in the brain and in how we process our senses. And so if we process our senses incorrectly or maladaptively, we are literally living in a different world.
That's true. That is very true. And that's one of the components with your book, Miracles Are Made, A Real Life Guide to Autism, that I found absolutely wonderful. Now, you are very much involved with neurofeedback.
Yes.
And I thought this is a wonderful tool because I have had the occasion to talk with certain physicians who utilize this in working with children that sometimes have various personality patterns, very aggressive, or they just are in a different. Their brainwaves are different, and they've actually measured the brainwaves and worked with them, and they've incorporated certain aspects of computers and software, and the children turn around so quickly. It's just amazing. And they say it's the way the brain functions.
Oh, yeah, the brain is fascinating. It's the only thing that's ever held my interest this long. It's so fascinating. The thing about neurofeedback, to help people understand, is that basically it's a teaching tool to the brain. And so let's put these pieces together because a lot of times people go, oh, okay, well, just brain exercise. And I'll explain how it's done in a second. But the important point here is that everyone knows the brain is plastic at this point. And, you know, in our generation right now,
mm-hmm.
it's very well known that there's neural plasticity, that the brain is changing, it's changeable. And they talk about it all the time. And still, in spite of that, they'll say, here's your diagnosis, you're stuck with it for life.
True.
Now, these two things don't go together. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
So one has to realize that if the brain is plastic, it's plastic. And
mm-hmm.
if you have a brain disorder, then it can be changed.
Mm-hmm.
So the degree and the difficulty and you know, how much, how far, all of that is certainly, it depends on the diagnosis, it depends on the person. If you have a degenerative disorder like Parkinson's where you're not making the dopamine that you need, of course there's going to be limits, but that doesn't mean you can't be helped. You can always be helped. And neural plasticity explains why one diagnostic situation has such a different end game than somebody else. So that's that whole willpower individuality thing. And neurofeedback takes advantage of this. It teaches the brain in its infinite plasticity how to shape itself in a way that is stronger, more optimal.
Mm-hmm. And this is important because there has been a myth that's been around for so long regarding the capacity of the brain. And as you say, not only that it is plastic, but not only is it plastic, but they now have found that the brain cells may die off, but new ones are being born every day.
Right.
And that when people are mentally active and when they are generally healthy, it's amazing what the brain is able to do. So it's just an incredible stride forward that we've made, and this enables us to work with people, but yet it's very hard for medical professionals, I think, to keep up with a lot of the new information because they're already so overwhelmed maybe with patients or environments, and the paradigms that have existed are literally disintegrating in front of our eyes at a speed that's almost incomprehensible.
I really think it's unfair of us to even expect our physician to. You know, it's an information age. We can access a lot of the information ourselves and go into our physician armed with knowledge. And we know ourselves, we know our child, we know our situation. I really think it's our own responsibility. We need to take some responsibility. You know, it just doesn't work otherwise.
I know you said that a chip grew between yourself and a specialist when you were working with finding out what was happening with your children. And you said that there was a boy, and his name is Dar, who introduced you to autism. Tell us why Dar has been so significant in your life.
Because Dar is the one that's still autistic.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's so interesting. I adopted these children. Six of the eight of my children were from other families, and four of them were on the spectrum of autism. And Dar, they all had huge stories, by the way. I focused much more on Dar in the book because Dar remains a teaching for me because he still struggles with so many aspects of autism. And the other children got better. So even though I focus in the book on Dar's story, and it's a heart-wrenching story, I mean, he's had a hard life, he is not alone in that heart-wrenching aspect. I just can't tell it all. You know, it was a big life. But he's been instrumental because I've had to slow down and understand every single aspect of the brain in order to help him. And every time I figured something out that helped Dar, like, move an inch, it helped one of the other kids or myself move miles.
Mm-hmm.
So we all needed different aspects of therapy and ways of looking at, you know, what's right and what's wrong. Can someone change? Can't they change? We all needed help. And because of Dar, I stayed motivated. I sometimes think of him as my driver in my life because I'm still motivated by Dar.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still exciting me.
Mm-hmm.
And he just turned 30, so, yeah.
My goodness. Now, one of the comments you said is coming to comprehend why the field of medicine, even in the face of indisputable evidence, moves so slowly to change its collective mind and accept new truths, eases the frustration and judgment one normally feels when dealing with that reality. Being armed, being educated. Tell us some of the steps that you went through to educate yourself, because each child was very different.
Yeah, each child was different. And again, I started with Dar, so Dar began this journey of discovery where I suppose, in fact, I began it for my own self. And maybe that's why I began adopting. But I didn't know that, because you don't know what's wrong with you until you're, you know, smack dab in the middle of it. But Dar, being my child, I had to help him. And he couldn't talk, and he couldn't look in eyes. And, you know, at first they told me he was blind and deaf and uneducatably retarded, and he was going to be put in an institution, but that nobody would give him a bed for the 2 months that he had to wait till his bed came available at this institution. And it wasn't a job I was normally doing. They were just, you know, offering this to me because they were desperate. And so I met him, I took him in, and, of course, never gave him back.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, then, of trying to help him, I started to peel these layers off the onion of, oh, my gosh, he's not deaf and he's not blind. He's autistic, you know, and I'd heard of it. I'd actually seen it in a Elvis Presley movie. And and so it's funny where our learnings come from. So I... you know, I just started reading, and at that time they did aversion therapy. At that time they were using cattle prods on autistic kids. They were putting them in little rooms, little closets that really look more like cubicles than closets, like a locker size, and sprayed ammonia jets on them. They were tying them, slapping them, you know, screaming at them. So it was an ugly world, a very ugly world when I adopted him for the autistic person. 1 in 10,000 had autism back then, so it was like rare. So nobody really, there wasn't enough of an army to fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I even tried the different things I was asked to do. At one point I was squeezing his shoulder and my nail dug into his skin and I saw blood and I'm like, just all this over teaching him how to get a fork. And I'm like, there's got to be a better way. I can't parent like this. I just hate this. So it was definitely a journey of, you know, look at the world, what do they think? Look at my child, what do I think? Look at myself, how, what can I stand? What am I willing to do? I'm willing to go all the way as long as it feels like loving parenting.
Mm-hmm.
But when I have to hate my child because I have to hate his autism or I have to hate his behaviors, I fall apart.
Well, I found it very informative in reading your book, Miracles Are Made, A Real Guide to Autism, because of the very human story that you told. You didn't try to sugarcoat anything. You didn't try to say, oh, we've got a magic wand here, this is going to go away. What you are doing with the material that you've published is educating. You're saying, this is what I have learned. And if you're a parent, for heaven's sakes, don't go into the blame game. This is the reality of what you're dealing with. Pay attention to your child because it's going to require you understanding that this is a whole new paradigm that you're going to go through. It is, you've got support. There are so many wonderful groups around that have been founded by women, not unlike you, that have walked a road frequently very alone and got through different things. I have just been amazed at some of the interviews that I've done, but I hadn't encountered anyone that had really worked with the neural feedback process. And I thought, this is incredibly valuable. Tell us about neural feedback. Who founded it? How has it come to be? And how have you been able to utilize it to help your children?
Sure. But first I want to just end with on the other subject of the fact that by the time you stop hating the autism, you get to discover your kids are really cute and quirky and adorable, and you get to fall in love with this crazy, weird world they live in, and that's a much better way to parent. It was because I got to that place, and I think I had to get there first, that I was able to open up my brain enough to look around and find neurofeedback.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I was too much at the beck and call of the professionals telling me what to do, and always engaged in this battle with, are they asking me to do something that I don't feel comfortable with my child, and try to explain why. And this, it was like a bad marriage. And then finally I just fell in love with my kids. And then I could seek different answers. And that was a really big piece. Then I found, I was reading an article, actually. I was taking a training and working with play therapy with autism. And I was just certified, like, days before. And my assignment was to, you know, find something in an autism magazine and do a report on it. And I read about neurofeedback. And when I read that, what it does is it says yes to the brain. Using a video game, you put a sensor on the head and you are looking at the EEG and you see what's out of alignment with what should be in balance. And then you tell this video game, work when his brain moves towards balance, don't work when it doesn't. And that's it. When I read about that and I read the science behind it, I thought, this is exactly what I'm doing with play. I'm illuminating all the positive. I'm saying, yes, do that, yes, do that, yes, do that. And I'm kind of diminishing the negative, giving it some attention, but very little. And I loved the idea that we could go straight to the brainwave function to do that rather than go through the behavior, which was a much longer pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So I then, after I read this article, I then kind of did some of the history you're asking about. I went and read a book about it and found out, like, how did it come to be? And it's a fascinating story. Way back in the 60s, there was a scientist, Barry Sterman, and he was working in a lab and working with some cats, with some other scientists, and he was noticing that a particular brainwave frequency in the cats is greater, it bursts up, when they're in a very calm, very focused, sort of like just before leaping to catch the mouse, you know, totally focused, but totally calm and ready for action. And he thought, wow, I wonder if we can train that up, get them to make even more of that so they're even stronger and more focused. So it was just an experiment that came out of curiosity, and they gave the cats a reward of chicken milk broth, and every time they made more of this frequency, and then the cats did, and they went, well, that was interesting, and put them back in the population and went on to other things. So it was just some curious moment. But then 6 months or so later, there was a request from NASA that they test this rocket fuel they were having a problem with. And astronauts were getting sick and seizing and vomiting and stuff. So they wanted to know where the toxicity level was. And when they did the experiment to test for that, they used cats. And there was a group that were highly resistant to seizures. And that group, when they looked back in the logs, turned out to be the original cats from the other experiment. That was the beginning. That was the beginning of neurofeedback, the realization that you could train brainwaves to change and that that would have a physiological effect on the functioning of the brain itself. And, I mean, it's beautiful. After that, they helped a bunch of people avoid brain surgery and the next. I mean, it just unfolds so exciting.
Now, with this, you became certified in this, mm-hmm. and you work with people today. You have some amazing stories about families and their autistic children, and some of them are heartbreaking stories because mm-hmm. the families honestly go through all kinds of emotions, everything from embarrassment to being afraid of different therapies, and we have this composite that goes on in the world daily. What's your favorite story?
Outside of my own home, because my favorite yes. stories are in my own home.
That's true, but outside your home.
Gosh, I don't know. So, of course, whatever answer comes to mind right now will probably be more what's my most recent one. Maybe my favorite one is because we were able to capture it, and it was my first client where I combined everything I do with neurofeedback and play, and they 100% listened to my advice. So it was my first experience of that. And, you know, I just sort of said, look, I really think your daughter could use this therapy. I'm doing it right now in a brain injury rehab center, and I would like to bring it into your home. And at that point, I had not taken the therapy and applied it to autism outside of my own family. At that mm-hmm. point, it was, you know, for stroke victims and trauma victims and stuff in the clinic, and then I was working in people's homes doing play therapy. And this family just trusted me to the nines, and I guess it's my favorite story because they accepted me with my brand new idea. You know, now everybody knows I do it, and they clamor after it, so it's different. But this was a real, you know, a real moment of trust. And so I came with my units, and we set up a six-week thing, and we were working with an 8-year-old girl who'd had many years of ABA, which is applied behavioral analysis, many years of Sunrise therapy, which is another type of therapy that I was certified in. She was seven. And so they were just going, please, we need to, you know, she had no language, none. Mm-hmm. And they just wanted something to work to get, you know, to get some language with her. Now, she was quite bright, but she couldn't talk. And she would, to show you her feelings, she'd hum a tune. Like, if she was feeling nervous and wanted to have you, like, embrace her in some way, she'd hum the Barney, ah, 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 like that. So she had different tunes that she would make, but she wouldn't move her mouth appropriately, so it would just be the sound from the throat. And there's a YouTube video of this. They can watch it. It's Lynette Louise Helps Autism. And she went in 6 weeks from nonverbal to, you know, celery, cauliflower, mm-hmm. open the door. It was amazing.
I know you mentioned, yeah.
Yeah,
you mentioned.
I knew from that moment.
So many wonderful stories.
Yeah.
Just so many wonderful
stories. Okay, this isn't just my family that this works for. This is something special that I have to take to the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You also bring up the importance of music, and you state a fact that if someone does neurofeedback, the IQ can go up actually 15 points.
Yeah, 10 to 15 points is pretty much what they see when they do tests.
That's amazing.
Isn't that? You know what? I think it's so funny.
Yeah,
the world is so funny. So you have this, I remember hearing on the radio that they had this new infrared cap for Alzheimer's people, and they were getting them to wear it all day long, and there was this huge, exciting information, and they were able to bring up the IQ 2 points. I'm sitting mm-hmm. there going, that's like, they remembered it was a chair today. Like, that's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have this technology, and it still fights to be understood.
Mm-hmm. And that is what I find so intriguing, because so many times, those persons that are going through certain mental challenges, this kind of a therapy would be able to assist them tremendously. Now, I want to ask you a very pointed question, because there may be some people listening that would like to know how they can find out about neurofeedback therapy, because it has, in your environment, just benefited these children tremendously. And every child is so different, because of just who they are and whatever level there is attributed to them. It disturbs me that many times in our society we're so quick to label somebody without really questioning enough to find out what might be behind it. You talk about how the value of supplements is important, how nutrition is important. All of these things are significant, but there are so many variables that can be included here, and working with a youngster's brain in a way that is going to empower that child is, I think, quite significant. How would someone find out where they could explore this variable? And if there is an adult that's listening that says, gee whiz, we have a member of our family, I'd love to have them be aware of this, maybe it could help them. So how would they go about finding somebody that was qualified?
Well, it's as easy as a Google search as far as finding neurofeedback. There's a lot of neurofeedback practitioners. There's various kinds of neurofeedback. So I want to be clear here. There's ILF, there's alpha theta, there's SMR, there's a few. And there's some that are called, they say they're neurofeedback or biofeedback for the brain, but they're quantum. I can't speak for anything other than the one that's my favorite that I'm very versed in. So everything that I refer to in the book is called SMR training. And it came from that original, the cat story that I told.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a specific kind of neurofeedback. Now, since then, there have been different kinds grow, and I've trained in all of them, and I can do all of them. My favorite in the app is the application of SMR. But that could be because I'm really good at SMR. You know, maybe mm-hmm. with someone else, it would be better to use a different one. I can't really speak to that. But I do know that in my hands, using SMR neurofeedback training is awesome. So I would ask them to at least know that. Go ahead and read a little on the Internet. The Internet's an awesome tool. Use it. Google it. Say, you know, neurofeedback SMR training. See what comes up. The mm-hmm. bottom line here is that, like every profession, you have people who are good at their job and people who aren't. And you have people who would be good with ADHD and people who would be good with OCD and people who would be good, you know, we could throw around letters, people who are good with Alzheimer's. People,
sure.
You have to find somebody that you like,
mm-hmm.
that likes your child, that your child likes. Because if your child doesn't like going to the clinic, they're not going to do it.
That is so true. That is so true. Lynette Louise has been my guest. Her book is Miracles Are Made, A Real-Life Guide to Autism. But this publication has a lot more in it than just the discussion of autism. She goes into a great deal of detail, but the information on neural feedback, I think, is exceptionally important because it has multiple applications. It might be something that would be helpful to you, the listener, in some way. But for those of you that know of children that have this disorder, if you know of any family that just feels absolutely, totally confused, frustrated, they're just weary, they don't know what to do, and they really don't want to put their kids on drugs, which affects the brain in sometimes a horrific way, especially when they're young. Miracles Are Made, A Real Life Guide to Autism is a must-read. Go to LynetteLouise.com. LynetteLouise.com, that's her website. She'll have all kinds of good information for you. Lynette, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you for being with me today, and keep up your work.
Thank you so much. And if they go to my website, please, for information on autism or neurofeedback, click to brainbody.com within the website.
Great. Brainbody.com within
the
website.
Oh, sorry, brainbody.net. No, brainbody.net.
Brainbody.net. Okay, good thing we got that corrected. Brainbody.net. If you go into the website, LynetteLouise.com. We'll be back in just a moment. Donna Sebo here. Miracles Are Made. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. By the way, phone lines are open. Telephone number to call into is 888-815-9756, and that is a worldwide toll-free number, 888-815-9756. Well, I understand we have a caller on the line. I had a quote I wanted to share with you, but we'll come to that later. Let's take the caller first, and then we'll show you how it's done on the Donna Sebo Show. And if you'd like to call in, again, 888-815-9756. Donna Sebo here. Welcome to the show, caller. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Thank you, Donna. It's Pat in Connecticut.
Oh, hi, Pat.
How are you?
Well, I'm just doing wonderful. What is it like back in Connecticut? Are the birds singing, the sun shining,
yes,
and the garden is blooming?
Beautiful.
Fabulous. Well, it's one of the most gorgeous states. It's been a long time since I've been there, but incredibly gorgeous. My favorite time back there is in the fall. I just love all the colors when they come out. That's just my favorite time. Okay, Pat,
beautiful.
Let's get down to business with you. First thing I'm looking at is no nonsense. Deal with the facts, no games here, no fantasies, no illusions. There is apparently something going on where you have to see the black and the white. You really don't want to go into rainbows. You have to get down to the bare bones of what you need to pay attention to. It's going to enable you to move forward into the change that you would like to demonstrate much quicker, and I'm getting the numbers 3 to 4, so I don't know if it's 3 to 4 weeks or 3 to 4 months when you will achieve what it is that you desire. Also, you better pay attention to these impressions you're getting in your mind about being in touch with certain individuals. I'm seeing 2 or 3 people that are really in your mind a great deal. There's a reason for this, and I think they're thinking of you just as strongly as you are of them. So there's a need to communicate. So pick up the phone. Forget the email nonsense. Pick up the phone and talk human to human. If you have to leave a voicemail, if they have that, wonderful, do it. But pick up the phone, make the call, because there's something going on, and you need to be made aware of it. What's on your mind? What would you like to ask me about today?
Well, you've helped me in the past with my car, and I think all that's been taken care of. Thank you very much. I am wondering if there's something else going on. I hear a sort of creak a sort of around my right front tire when I turn or slow down at a decline, and just wondering if there's more stuff I need to do with my car and if you can see what that is.
Well, I think what you really need to do the next time you take the car in for an oil change, just make a note of the sounds and where they are. I think what's happening is that you've got a section of mechanical apparatus that needs to be greased. It needs to have something that is going to enable it to move more smoothly without the noise. It's, for the lack of a better term, it's like auto-arthritis. I don't ever think anybody's ever coined that one, but who knows? I don't know. But it's just, that is just something that's come up. So there are parts that need to have a particular lubricant. And when that lubricant gets low, then that's what you're going to be hearing. But pay attention, make a note, and just talk to your mechanic, because apparently you have a pretty good mechanic. He's not adverse to just saying, well, let me take a look, and if it's something we need to take care of, we will. But
I
he really will. Yeah, he's just a real nice guy, so I just would say pay attention to that, and you'll be just fine.
Okay, now, I'm not due for an oil change for 1,000 miles. That's what I was wondering, if I should get it in sooner.
That will be your choice. I don't see it being detrimental if you waited a while, but I do think you need to just keep a little notebook in the car. When you notice certain things, just make your little notes, because it's not a brand-new automobile. So, you know, again, it's... sometimes gets its little touch of creaking creaks.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and happy 4th to you.
Well, thank you, Pat. Happy 4th of July to you, too. Enjoy it. I hope the sun shines. It's shining here in the Pacific Northwest. Everybody here is just absolutely just giddy, because yesterday we were freezing. We were so cold. And today, it's wonderful. People are just beside themselves. Everybody's smiling because the sun's out. So enjoy.
All right. You too. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's how simple it is. Just give me a buzz. I give you information. And then if you would like to ask me a question, you can do that. By the way, so many times people will say, gee, Donna, what should I ask? You can ask anything you want. There's no such thing as a dumb question. Believe it or not, I think when we understand that, we're so far ahead of the average individual, because too many times, I know I've been guilty of this, we'll say, oh, I can't ask that question. It's just going to sound stupid. Well, if you don't ask, you're not going to find out what you need to know. It's okay to say you don't know something. You know, when you're a kid in school, so often if you do that, there'll be somebody say, oh, gee, you're so dumb. You should have known that. Excuse me. You're not ever going to know everything. And if you don't know, you need to ask. I'll tell you what, lots of times people that you think are really super special, they don't know what you think they know. And it's really interesting when you learn to ask questions, you get a good insight into the individual that you're dealing with. So that's why I tell you, there's no such thing as a dumb question. And if you have a dream you want interpreted or anything like that, give me a buzz. I want to share a quote with you because I really feel that it's significant. 4th of July is coming up. James Russell Lowell said this. He said, no man or woman is born into the world whose work is not born with him. There's always work and tools to work with for those who will, and blessed are the horny hands of toil. The busy world shoves angrily aside the man who stands with arms akimbo until occasion tells him what to do. And he who waits to have his task marked out shall die and leave his errand unfulfilled. How many times do we as individuals buy into the propaganda that there's some magic hoodoo, voodoo, fairy, whatever you want to call it, that's out there that's just going to just make our life absolutely perfect? The biggest scams in the world are the ones that say, I really can guarantee you, you'll never have to worry about this again, but it's only going to cost you $500,000 to do what I tell you to do, but by golly, it's going to work. We always have that part of ourselves that wants to look for a shortcut. And I can tell you, both from personal experience and working with so many people through the years, it's hard work becoming the individual you really are. There are no shortcuts. I think the only shortcut I ever recommend to anybody is to take a vocational aptitude test to find out what your strengths are. Because we all, just like James Lowell said, we come in with a package. And maybe we've got a gift of gab. Maybe we're someone that just absolutely loves working out of doors. Maybe we're someone that's a good problem solver. Maybe we're good with kids. Things are what they are, and we need to honor and respect our own uniqueness. Now, society and various environments that we grow up within may say, gee, you've got to fit into this paradigm because that's just the way it is. Well, we're very fortunate in today's world, and also to be in a country where we can make choices, men and women both. And it wasn't always that way. I think history is so important for us to review periodically, because we need to realize that the freedoms that have evolved that we enjoy in the United States at this time, freedom of speech, being able to leave a job, choose what we want to do, be willing to dare to fail, we have the right to do that. In a lot of environments, you don't have that right. It's really hard, almost impossible in some cultural environments to break what we would call the glass ceiling of a caste system or societal perceptions, and you may not even have any place to go. But here we've had this, but it was fought for. It was fought for. Men and women both stood strong, stood tall, many of them losing everything to defend what they felt was the right of the individual, the right to choose, the right to fail if you wanted to go through the experience, but also the right to succeed. You have that. So when you wait for somebody else to do something for you, it just doesn't work. The best investment you have is in yourself. You could be a millionaire and have all kinds of things, but if you don't know who you are and if you don't take the time to work with your strengths, your life is going to go into shreds. I've known many, many people who have attained the financial success that they thought was what they really wanted. But the truth was, the success that they really wanted was the success that comes from within knowing the self. And that is hard work. No shortcuts there. So I believe that we do have the opportunity to use tools, and we are going to have to pay our dues. That's part of the American way, and I like it. I really like it. But you have to work for what you want. There's no such thing as a free lunch. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone line is open, 888-815-9756. We're going to be back in just a minute.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Next week, we've got a fascinating lineup of people. We're going to be starting off on the Monday, which is the 4th of July, and we've got some wonderful stories we're going to be sharing. It's an open mic day for the entire hour. And then on Tuesday, we're going to be talking with Jerry Smith, a man who has walked a very, very tough road in life. His book is titled, Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? Nice man. Then Richard Berkeley, Rags to Rags. Yes, this is a man who became a millionaire after many excruciating experiences. And then we're going to be talking with another millionaire on Thursday, and he did it with garage sales. We are going to learn what we can do to make money. If that's something you've wanted to be able to really see yourself doing, and some people are fabulous at it, by golly, Michael Newton is going to be able to do that. Then, I live in the Pacific Northwest, so I was mesmerized by this book, Monsters of the Pacific Northwest, and that is going to be absolutely terrific. So that's a week from today. Very unique lineup, and by the way, all you have to do is go into show information under the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll see a listing of all the upcoming guests. Yes, they're all there, starting as of today, and you'll have all that information. Regrettably, because there was last-minute news that came in to me, I'm going to be sending out the newsletter perhaps tonight or tomorrow. I'm not sure. I've got to get all of this detailed information that I need to have in the newsletter out there, along with some other things. So it is just absolutely amazing how busy stuff is getting. Here in the Northwest, we have wonderful agricultural products, wonderful foods. One of the favorites are Rainier cherries. Oh, they are absolutely awesome. Well, this year, the cherry farmers, because we've had so much rain and cold temperatures, they were very concerned that they might not have much of a crop at all. But the weather's starting to warm up, and the cherry harvest, well, it's coming in a little bit later, but it is going to be happening. Now, Rainier cherries are known for their golden yellow color. They're huge, too. They're just, oh, they're so yummy to eat. They're just terrific all by themselves. Oh, and by the way, did you know cherries have so many nutritional benefits? People that have arthritis, cherry juice is one of the best things that you can have. It's just absolutely terrific. Well, if you're buying cherries, there's some things that you need to know about. One, you need to look for shiny green stems. Now, this is something we're normally not even going to give 5 seconds of attention to. But if they're brittle or they're broken, it can indicate that the cherries were picked too soon and they're not going to fully ripen. If the stems are a dark brown, the cherries will be very, very ripe. So that gives you an inside track on what to look for with cherries. Also, when you're buying your cherries, give one or two cherries a gentle squeeze. They should feel firm but not rock hard. If they feel squishy, don't buy them. they're too ripe. They actually, if they're too ripe, they might make good preserves. That's something that I've done. Also, if you see tiny brown spots on the Rainier cherries, and I've seen them, and I was guilty of this, I thought there was something that wasn't up to par with Rainier cherries. Well, it's not that at all. What I've learned is the tiny brown spots you might see on Rainier cherries, they're not blemishes, they're a sign of higher sugar content. Fascinating stuff. I mean, really interesting. While I'm thinking of it, let me share with you a recipe for cherry liqueur. And this is something that a friend taught my husband and myself many years ago, and we now have a very nice store of cherry liqueur. And what you do, you get a real big glass jar. You know those pickle jars that you buy that are just huge? Well, you get one of those pickle jars. Make sure they're clean. I'd say put it through the dishwasher so it really gets scalded. And then, of course, it just needs to dry, and then you're ready to go. What you're going to need are a substantial amount of cherries, and we found usually it took about 5 to 10 pounds, dependent on the quality of the cherry. And you can use Rainier, you can use the Bing cherry. That's my husband's favorite, is the Bing cherry. But anyway, you take the cherries, and you go through the cherries. You wash them, you go through them, and you remove the stems. You don't remove the seeds, though. You make sure that you put the cherries dry. Once they've been washed, you dry them off thoroughly, and then you check the cherries. You don't want any cherries that are split or have any kind of what I'd call a blemish on them, or if they're severely bruised or overly ripe. You don't want to use them. You want the firm cherry. And you fill this glass jar all the way up, and well, again, these are the real big pickle jars that we would like to get. And you fill those up, leaving about a 2-inch space above the cherries. Put just nothing but cherries in. Then you take granulated sugar, and you fill that cherry-filled jar with sugar. You just let the sugar go, and it'll shake down, and you just fill that jar with solid sugar all the way up to just that above the cherries itself. So the cherries, everything inside just covered with sugar. And then what you do is take vodka and buy the cheapest vodka you can get. This is not something where you need to use high-quality vodka. It's the cheapest vodka. And you just pour it then slowly over the sugar and cherry mixture in the big jar. It is going to start to fill. And again, just slowly do that. Just let it fill up. Again, leave a good 2 inches in the big jar at the top for expansion. Then once the vodka covers the sugar and the cherries, you just got a little bit of vodka there, you screw on your tight lid, and then take a towel, put it on your counter, and then put the jar on its side. And periodically, like once or twice a day, just walk by and gently rotate, roll that glass jar back and forth just a couple of times. And what you're going to see is a process of breaking down of the sugar. So eventually it becomes clear. All of the liquid becomes clear. You'll see the color coming out of the cherries. It's a fascinating process to watch. Then, after that sugar has been dissolved and it's absorbed, take that jar, put it in some place, and just leave it alone for a good year, for 1 year. Actually, it's good when you leave it alone for 15 years because it just is amazingly delicious the longer you leave it stored. And after 1 year, you could take it out and taste it. It is going to be wonderful. You drain the cherries out of it and just throw them away, or put them in your compost or whatever you want to do. But they're not fit to eat. You just can't eat them. But the liqueur that is made is absolutely awesome. And you really could do this with any fruit if you so desired. Well, I know we're just about out of time. The 4th of July, I know you're just going to have an absolutely fabulous weekend. Take care. Don't be in too much of a hurry, because those freeways, roadways, are absolutely packed. I know what they're like here in Washington. It's incredible. So remember, give yourself plenty of time. Don't be in a hurry. and have fun wherever it is that you're going this holiday weekend. I'll be back here live on Monday, though it is the 4th. I'll still be here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.